This podcast is a presentation of University of California Television. Like what you hear? Consider making a donation at uctv.tv/donate so we can continue to bring you more great programs.
Thank you so much for being here. This evening we have performers who bring the elegance, joy, and power of street dance to the world. The native of Miami, Jonathan Boogs Smith, who's mastered and innovated the art of popping, and is an Emmy Award-winning director, movement artist, and choreographer. And Charles Lilbuck Riley, who's developed his own style of jukin, a dance form with roots in Memphis, and he is an award-winning performing artist, entrepreneur, and advocate for the arts and humanities. Thank you for the warm welcome that you've given them. We're going to spend a few moments together talking and then ask for questions from the audience. Thank you so much for doing the inspiring work that you do, changing lives of people who come into contact with you through the concert stage, the screen, and music, commercial industries. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great. We're doing great. Thanks for having us here. And thank y'all for coming out to, you know, see our process. We really appreciate it.
Sure.
How are your moms doing?
Moms are great.
Good.
My mom's doing well. It's been a while since we shot that from now, mom's doing great. She's still one of my biggest supporters. Mm-hmm. You know, her Instagram is BuckMama1.
Nice.
So she always, so she for sure lets it be known that she's, you know, my biggest supporter. But mom's great, you know, right. They're just as excited about us and what we're doing than they've ever been. So.
Good. Mama Bugs.
Mom's doing good, you know. You can't tell my mom anything now. She was on a Netflix documentary. So, you know, she was really excited to be able to share a part of, like, her journey a little bit in the documentary, because she always wanted to be an entertainer and a dancer, but just didn't have the resources to do so. So she's kind of, like, living vicariously through my dreams and things that I've been doing. So it's really nice to, like, have a moment for both of our mothers to be a part of our journeys and a part of the film.
Yep.
Really beautiful. Yeah. You teach us to recognize that the social practice of street dance is rigorous, formal, artistic training on the streets themselves. And so I'm wondering who were some of your best teachers in street dance communities? And then maybe also, like, who are your fiercest competitors? Like, who are the people who just made you up your game because you needed to do that in the performance space?
I love these types of questions because we get to talk about the people that y'all don't know about. You know, mm-hmm. usually this question is about, you know, who's your biggest inspiration, and it goes to, like, certain people that you may know, like, of course, Michael Jackson, people like that. But the ones that helped pave the way for us, we think that's so important to talk about. There's this guy named Mariko Flake. We call him Dr. Rico, that lives in Memphis, Tennessee. We call him Dr. Rico because he knows a little bit about every dance, every street dance style there is out there. You know, he, at least a little bit about every street dance out there. He does the education. He was very important to me in my process in learning learning Memphis jukin, that street dance style, because that's a culture that they have in Memphis, Tennessee. I was born in Chicago, but raised in Memphis for most of my life. My family moved there when I was at a very young age, and this is a culture that's been happening in Memphis, Tennessee, as far as Memphis jukin goes, since before I was even, you know, before I even moved there, before I even knew about it or I knew it existed. So this culture has already been thriving. And when I discovered it for myself, when I discovered this dance style in Memphis and did everything I could do to get to become, you know, good at it, there was only, you know, we didn't have social media. Mm-hmm. You know, we didn't have any of these things that we can just watch somebody and just learn from. You had to just find it. It had to just, you had to just be in those right places in the right time. And so I always did a lot of training for myself from what I've seen in bits and spurts, but, like, that was this one moment where I got to see all of the greats in Memphis do it. So, and Dr. Rico was one of them, and he was one of the guys who opened and welcomed me into that community with open arms when he saw what I was capable of. He said, I see you got a lot of potential. You're great. You're doing amazing things. Let me hook up with you and let me help sharpen those tools. Mm-hmm. And ever since then, you know, I've been infatuated with the style because his approach is always about bringing the best out of you and not trying to, you know, make you look like him and make you look like a certain person within that style. But, you know, how can you bring what you have special to this, you know, to this art form? Mm-hmm. And he was very open with dance, and that's what I needed, somebody that was open with dance, because sometimes our forefathers of these styles, they want it to look a certain way, and he can attest to that in his own style as well. Mm-hmm. As well, you know, they want the form to look a certain way, which is, you know, important to a certain extent, but he was free, and I always like to be free when I approach the movement. You know, mm-hmm. I already had my own way of thinking about how I approach that movement, and Dr. Rico, he was just one of those guys who was just like, oh, be you, man, how would you approach it? And he was really creative about it. You know, from having us dance with shoes on our hands and using those as tutty. Like, he was just the most creative guy in Memphis that was doing it, and I just fell in love with that. Mm-hmm. But it was guys like Dr. Rico, guys like Daniel Price, who is one of the best at Memphis Juke, and you can look up these people. You know, people like Jock Quincy, who was an OG at it, who started that Gangsta Walk era. That was the era before Memphis Juke. And so all of these guys, you know, have paved the way and helping mold who I am as a joker.
Beautiful.
For me, it started, I did a small stint in Baltimore, and I remember going to like my first talent show, and I was in the sixth grade, so I think I was 11, 12 years mm-hmm. old, something like that, and there's these four guys no one will ever know about, but they were like everything to me. Richie, Raheem, Corey Ruff, and Bobby Digital, and they battled each other on stage in front of like 1,000 people. And I just remember, like, for me, you ever seen those movies where like the guy falls in love with the girl and everything in the room disappears and all they got is their eye on the beautiful woman? Like, that's how I felt about the dance. It looked otherworldly. It looked divine. It looked like it was from another dimension to me. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I gotta learn how to do that. And because I naturally was already kind of rhythmic, those guys took me under their wing. And even though I was younger than them, they were high school guys. But they used to throw like the middle school gym was like bigger, for some reason, bigger than the high school. And so they would throw high school talent shows in the middle school gym. And when I just went up to them and was like, man, I want to learn. And I showed them a little bit of what I could do. You know, I tried to like show off a little bit. And then Corey took me under his wing, and he introduced me to legends like Mr. Wiggles, Poppin' Pete, Mr. Animation, rest in peace. They opened the door of like the pioneers who created my style. And from that point on, I just kind of became obsessed with the form, and I drilled it every day. And then I moved to Miami because my mother was having some domestic issues in her relationship. So we left the Baltimore area, and we moved to Miami. And the guys who kept me on my toes, when I moved to Miami, there was so much talent in the Fort Lauderdale, Pompano Beach, Miami area that, like, there's guys like the Deadly Venoms, Liquid, Red Alert, City Boy Terrell, Anonymous, Popcorn, Aqua Boogie, my mentor, one of my mentors to this day, Reversal. So many dancers, I could name like 20, 30, 40 amazing dancers, but all of them made me want to step my game up. Because at that time, before we were doing things like this, you just wanted to be known in your neighborhood. That was like the biggest deal. Like, it didn't matter about likes or views or getting jobs or gigs. It was like, if somebody knew my name in the town across town or the city or the other area, that was like, you were a superstar in our world. So to me, those guys were like superstars. And so just them knowing who I was made me want to keep leveling up my skill set.
You had to earn that too, you know? You had to go to somebody else's neighborhood and call them out. It was like that.
Yeah,
so,
it was.
And yeah, and getting back to like some of the people who kept me on my toes, there was this one guy in particular named Caviar. That's his actual name. Yeah, it's with a K, Caviar. You've seen him in Vail, Colorado, actually. But Caviar was this one guy in particular. His name was Caviar Taylor, and he kept me on my toes because I remember I thought I was just a it was one point where my head was just this big. I finally got really good at the style, and I was in a Crystal Palace skating rink in Memphis. It's closed down now, but this is where a lot of us used to congregate to practice. We used to go to the skating rinks, and the skaters would come off the floor at a certain time, and they let the dancers just go out there and do their thing. And I went out there, and I was just like waving and just doing all these different things that I've learned. And Caviar came, and everybody was talking to Caviar about this guy. This guy thinks he can just another. So Caviar ran up on me, and he just started battling me immediately, and we just went head to head. And he was like, "Hold on, bro. You're really good, but you just need to slow down. You're moving too fast." And ever since then, you know, we've been going head up, and I've just been learning so much from him because he's such a great wealth of knowledge when it comes to, like, you know, Memphis Jukin in the past and just, you know, keeping that alive in your foundation and all of that. So I learned a lot from him and a lot of the peers, a lot of the guys that that were actually helped molding me. Like I said, like, there was this one guy in particular, named Bobo. His name was Jeremy Greer. We called him Bobo. And he was a big influence because just like he had that story about that tunnel vision, like when I first walked into the skating rink, I seen this guy gliding on carpet like it was water. And that's when I first fell in love with it because he had the gold in his mouth with the Jordans on, and he was just looking like everything I wanted to look like when I was younger. And he was just, like, everybody was just surrounding him in this big circle, and he was just moving unworldly. And that's when I knew that's what I wanted to do. But all of these people, they helped mold me and they helped me elevate, but they also kept me on my toes because we had to battle each other because they knew that's how, you know, you get good at the style within there. You know, that's how you can, you know, we challenged each other in the city. So,
yeah. You both say that the dance is otherworldly. And I was just wondering if you could just talk about that a little bit, like what that means, sort of both being in the body and out of the body, that otherworldliness, that tunnel vision, everything else is disappearing. How does that influence your process? So what you make and how you make it?
That's a good question.
For me, I've seen a lot growing up, you know? I've seen a lot. We grew up extremely poor, you know, a lot of poverty, just living in my grandma's basement, you know what I'm saying? And didn't have anything. And in the neighborhood I lived in, I've seen a lot, you know? A lot of things that were uninspiring, but also a lot of things that I would have that me and my sister, one of the things that kept me and my sister going, one of my oldest sisters was dance, and we would watch Michael Jackson, a VHS tape of one of his tours religiously. And he was one of those otherworldly dancers that I've never seen move. Like, I've never seen anybody move like how he was moving when he was performing. And I always thought as a kid, because I didn't have a lot of access and we didn't have access, that's his. Nobody will ever be able to move like that. You know, that's his. Close to like this divine movement as it's gonna get, you know what I mean? But then I end up seeing guys in my neighborhood moving just as good, you know, and in concrete and looking like me, and showing me that this was something that I can actually obtain. That, you know, it was like a diamond in the rough for me to see that dance style, because I know where they come from too, and I know what it takes to be able to. Especially now, I know what it takes to be able to move your body in that way. I know how much practice it takes. I know how much training and strength that it takes to be able to move your body that way. But I also know what we was going through every single day growing up in Memphis, Tennessee, and how much sacrifice it took to get that good, regardless of what you were going through. And that's otherworldly to me, you know, that sacrifice that's needed to be able to get to that point where you can move in that way. A lot of people think that movement is just natural and it's in us because it's a part of, you know, our culture, but that's not the case. It takes so much work to be able and dedication and sacrifice to be able to move your body in those particular ways. And I think that goes over a lot of people's heads, and I think that's what makes it magic for me, you know, to know that they put so much work into looking like they're magical beings, you know, and just floating. And so that's one thing that just makes it, you know, one of the most, in street dance in general, one of the most unique dance styles there is, because a lot of it is things we have to teach ourselves.
Yeah, for me, It took a while to get to the step where I understood that what I was doing was like a healing modality. Mm. Like, it took me a long time to grasp it, because, you know, when you grow up in the spaces we grow up in, there's sometimes a lot of toxic masculinity. It's a lot of ego, a lot of bravado, because like we said earlier, it's like every, you know, your reputation mattered in the different neighborhoods and earning it. And like, to me, it was kind of one of those things where, you know, like, over time, the otherworldliness is like, it feels like there's a lot of things in life I can't control, you know, but when I'm moving, it feels like I'm the closest I can possibly be to divine energy, you know? And so that's why when you see Buck and I perform, like, we try to constantly tap into those spaces, because to me, it's like the purest version of myself. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, you strip yourself of ego, you strip your, because before, it wasn't that. I wanted to be good for all the ego purposes. I was kind of wearing it as an armor, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And because to defend myself in the neighborhood, you know what I mean? But then as I got older and I started to grow and become more vulnerable and work on myself more, I realized, like, oh, this gift is deeper than just being good, deeper than just being skilled. It's like a way for me to shed trauma. It's a way for me to tap into like a divine energy that I know is within my body. And that's why now I'm like, no wonder the legends and all these icons and stuff that I would watch growing up like spoke to me in such a way, because I think they had already reached that place mm-hmm. and I hadn't. But, you know, I always say I didn't choose popping. Popping, like, it chose me. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, I saw it and something drew me to it at such a young age. And then now I've been doing it 25 years. You learn 25 years later, like, oh, now I know what it's really all about. And it's intentionality. It's using that energy to harness the most vulnerable version of yourself and tell the most truest stories that you can. So everything in our work is, we try to root it from that otherworldliness that's rooted in truth, mm-hmm. if that makes any mm-hmm. sense, what I'm saying.
Yep.
And yeah, so that to me is what makes it otherworldly, not just the illusion and the look of it, that too, but it's also like the spiritual place that it comes from and what it can do for you spiritually, I think, is what makes it otherworldly for me.
Thank you. I have more questions about this, but I want to get to it later.
Yeah, no stress.
I wanted to take us on a slightly different tack for now,
mm-hmm.
and I wanted to think about the ways in which both of you have made the forms that you've learned and inherited your own, that both of you have some specific journeys of innovation. The film gives us you watching Mr. Wiggles, maybe on a VHS tape,
yeah.
And you've told us again about learning from folks in the neighborhood. And we see a little bit. I mean, I think that the film is beautiful and so deceptive because it's so short
mm-hmm.
and it says so much, but then of course it says so little because it's so short.
Yeah.
And so I just wanted to know a little bit about your process of innovation and transformation as you took these forms and turned them into something that you're changing.
I think as far as like, it's not being afraid to take risks. I think I have two answers to your question. Mm-hmm. One, it was a part of the culture to not look like someone else. Mm-hmm. You would get made fun of, you would get clowned. Even if I dressed like Buck, oh, he's wearing the Jordans like Buck wears it, or he's wearing his hat like that. Wasn't like, you wanted to always have your own style, your own flavor, you wanted your own identity. So in my neighborhood, it was very, very, you know, praised if you had your own style of dress. So you applied that to every aspect of your life, dance, dress, you know, however you did it. But also like music choices and how we've always saw the dance and saw no boundaries to it. That's why me and Buck really connect, because even though we do two different disciplines, it's still under the umbrella of street dance. And we always felt like, oh, street dance is just a tool to illustrate music. It doesn't have to be done to any specific kind of music. If you look in our playlist, we got Yo-Yo Ma, Abel Korzanowski, and then we got Travis Scott and Drake. Do you get what I'm saying? Like, our playlist is like, our palette of music is so broad because we want to show people there is no boundary to the form. So there's no boundary to the story you can tell. There's no boundary to the music it can be done to. And I think that mindset, plus my neighborhood forcing me to kind of have my own style, hence why I'm up here in a pink zebra, a whole pink out. That's just who I am. Like, every part of me, from the way I dress to the way I talk to the way I walk, I want it to always be uniquely me, because that was like a culture thing. And then, you know, the art form wise is like not being afraid to tell any story and not being afraid to do it to any kind of music, you know?
Okay. Yeah, I would say that's definitely, you know, just piggybacking off what he said, that's mm-hmm. definitely one, you know, some of the things that help inform the way we moved. And my process personally was, you know, like he said, trying to define that individual, like my individuality within this style of mm-hmm. dance. And that's what's so special about these street dances that are, you know, rooted in freestyle or rooted in just finding yourself through the movement, mm-hmm. Is that development. And for me personally, what one of the things was, you know, my flexibility when it comes to the physicalness of it. Mm-hmm. One of the things is my flexibility. I knew I was flexible. So mm-hmm. I tried to think about, okay, how can I incorporate this as a part of my style? Because this is something that I don't see often. Or in some of the other things where, okay, I like, you know, when those guys spin on their toes, but I don't see them stay up there. How can I stay up there longer? And these questions that I would ask myself, you know, or I don't see, or just, you know, even being in it, in my house, just trying to innovate a glide. Like, I see this guy gliding like this. How can I switch this up and make it my own? Okay, he has this kind of like a S shape that he's making when he glides. How can I flip that and push it and reverse it and go this way? Or how, you know, so it's all types of different questions that you're asking yourself within those trenches of practicing your craft. And through that, I kind of developed, you know, my own personal style when I started to add these different things and started to question, you know, how can I bend and shape and reform what's already there? Mm-hmm. So that's a big part of that process. And like he said, just our music palette has always been open, and we just enjoy listening to different music. Like, I enjoy listening to classical music. I always enjoy the challenge of dancing to different music. And when you do that, that helps in form a different approach to music. To your movement. So me juking to, like you said, like a Travis Scott song, and then me juking to like a Yo-Yo Ma song or track, or, you know, an Abel Korsinowski track, it totally changes the mood and the vibe that you approach. Because when we move, it's not just for the sake of movement. It's always informing how the music makes us feel and mm-hmm. how we can tell our story through that mood. And you know, one of Boogs' things is the mantras that I love is like, that he asks himself is like, what does it look like? What does it feel like? What does it sound like? You know, he asks those three questions to himself. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I think we both have been doing throughout our lives, and letting that guide the way as far as like how we approach, you know, our movement, which mm-hmm. made it something else. But those questions that I would ask myself as far as that innovation, that kept me open to actually learning different styles of movement, to actually have a broader spectrum I can pull from. Me saying, okay, I want to be able to stay on my toes longer, and then getting an actual opportunity to take ballet, like, okay, this is the perfect opportunity. I'm not going to say no to this because I live in the hood in Westwood and these guys will look down on me or make fun of me. You know what mm-hmm. I'm saying? I actually kept my channel open and kept these and took those opportunities regardless, because I knew I had a I knew this was my passion and this is what I wanted to do, and I wouldn't let anything stop that. And I just wanted to be a great dancer in general, not just a great juker. So yeah. Those questions that I had to help better my innovation and the way and my personal style that I wanted, I kept, like I said, I just, you know, kept gravitating towards those things that'll help make me different and make me more of an individual.
How do you find new music?
I'm the worst. I don't like, I know some movement artists who like really dig for music. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? I'm like, I'm random. Like, it the music kind of finds me. Like, I watch a movie and I'm like, ooh, that score for that scene was really powerful, and I'll be trying to Shazam that. Uh-huh. You know what uh-huh. I mean? I'm not like going on SoundCloud and trying to find a bunch of mixes and stuff. It's uh-huh. more like the music kind of comes comes to me. Like, I'm really big on movies. I love film. So I'm always looking for, like, cinematic, emotional, you know, tracks that you can play and you instantly either want to cry or it gives you chills or, like, mm-hmm. I'm always looking for that kind of sound. Mm-hmm. And then, it just naturally, I should dig more for music, you know. I am a funk connoisseur, though. Okay. I do look up a lot of funk music because the dance I do derives from funk music. Mm-hmm. So I try to, like, stay up on the classics as much as I can because I like practicing to the classic music. But usually I find music through watching film. I think music and film go hand in hand, obviously. And I think the score is probably one of the most underrated, important parts of a film. Mm-hmm. And I think it doesn't get enough credit that sometimes when you're watching a scene, you don't realize you're feeling that way, mm-hmm. not just because of the actors, but there's subliminal sonics playing that are like changing the vibration and the frequency of what you're looking at. Mm-hmm. So I tend to look, when I watch film, that's how I kind of find music, through film.
And I think subconsciously, that's how we started to grow to love these different sonics. And that's why Michael Jackson has been such a big inspiration in our lives, because watching videos or watching that movie Moonwalker, for example, that Michael Jackson was in, you know, he had a lot of different sonics. You know, They Don't Care About Us, he was yelling at you. It was a rock vibe. But then he also mm-hmm. had Smile, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. that had those strings in there that just tugged at your heart. So just the people that we were inspired by and the way that they were using these different sonics and the way that we felt, you know, has always been attached to us since we were kids and since we were coming up in this dance style. And I think that's informed a lot of, like, the type of music that we're attracted to.
100%.
And as well as films. But for me, I was lucky enough to graduate from a visual and performing arts school in Memphis. The only one that we had, it was called Yo Academy. And, you know, it didn't last long. They shut down, like, shortly after I graduated. But in that school, I was able to be around so many different amazing musical students, you know. And in the lunchroom, there were so many things happening, from people from this band person or this person that was producing a certain track. It was so many different things going on. And I got to have a better appreciation for different sonics, too. You know, that love for that and that search for that, for those different sonics started in high school for me. And, you know, I have my different, you know, I'm a Gemini. I have my different moods. So, and I have my different eras of, like, what I went through, you know, in childhood. You go through these different eras. And I went through my rock era, where I was just like, and I was just angry at the world. And I went through my whole, my era of vulnerability and just, you know, wanting to cry and wanting to let certain emotions out when I listened to certain songs, and certain songs, you know, automatically pulling that emotion out for me. And I had certain, you know, sonics that I gravitate towards in my maturation. But you know, it just kept getting deeper and deeper.
You were using all your senses.
Yep, exactly.
It means that choreographically, there's no limits.
No limits.
Okay, so when I watch you perform, I have a question for both of you. It seems to me like Jukun lives in your feet. And I'm just wondering if you could talk a little bit about how important your feet are in Jukun. I have a similar question for you.
The feet are very important. One thing that goes unnoticed is the bounce mm-hmm. that's attached to that. And the bounce is the heartbeat, okay. You know, and that goes all the way back to African dance and the way that they would, you know, bounce and use this vibration, you know, and pulse. But the bounce informs kind of what you do with your feet. But the feet are very important because Memphis Jukun is a dance style that was birthed from what we called the gangster walk at the time, and that was a confident strut, and for me that just, you know, represented moving forward and moving through, you know, whatever happened throughout your day and all the traumas that you experience. And so the feet has all, you know, the use of your feet and getting from one point to another has always been, you know, involved in dance in general, you know, but with Memphis Jukun is really important because we have specific we have specific fundamentals that derive around steps. Mm-hmm. You know, steps is a part of the fundamentals, you know. We have, you know, from the L step to the point toe to the heel toe to different certain glides that we've developed within the style. So, yeah, we've always been centered around the feet work, but also the bounce and what we do up here.
Okay. Where does the bounce live? Where does the bounce live?
Oh. The bounce, it lives in the heart, you know. It lives in the center. The bounce starts in the center. Okay. Because, I mean, that's where it comes from. And everybody has that naturally. Like, if, you know, when you're a baby, you know, when you're dancing, you're bouncing. Mm-hmm. Right. But even, like, I was asking some of the students today, I said, you know, how many of you guys just had a song that you just couldn't help but to nod your head to? And that's how it all starts, you know, when we listen to music. And we just had a deeper bounce in Memphis when we heard that those sonics that it came from. And it wasn't just a head nod, it was a full body bounce. Okay. And that's, you know, where that energy came from us. It started here, though. It started with this.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
And then it just exploded.
I love it. Bugs, it feels to me like popping, the foundation is in the shoulders. It feels like it starts and lives in the shoulders. Mm. How important are the shoulders in popping, and is there another place where popping lives for you?
Popping is it's a full body dance, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's a lot of muscle contraction, a lot of muscle isolation, muscle control. I mean, since it derives from the funk era, like, it's really like, you know, I feel like funk lives in three places. It lives in your shoulders, it lives in your hips, it lives in your feet. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I feel like most people, when they hear music, they might move their shoulders first, or they might move their hips first, or they might want to step and move their feet. So popping is like, you know, people know it as an umbrella term, but, like, you know, back in the day, it was like popping was just actually contracting your muscles to the beat of the music. Then you have waving, you have animation, you have tutting, which is inspired by ancient Egyptian hieroglyphics and, like, the stuff on the walls. Mm-hmm. Then you have animation, which is inspired by, like, stop motion films. Mm-hmm. Or you ever seen those flip books where you flip them and it takes like 100 pages for someone to go da-da-da-da-da, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, so it took those, what are those old movies, like Medusa and Jason and the Argonauts and, like, all those kind of, like, a Sinbad and all those, like, old claymation stop motion mm-hmm. movies. Like, popping got a lot of influence from that. That's why it's very illusion-based. You're supposed to kind of look otherworldly. Mm-hmm. And I think it just speaks to how, like, black futurism was happening way, way before people started using that term, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying? Because you could see they were already thinking of how they could move otherworldly or look like they're from another planet mm-hmm. or, like, you know, it's very illusion-based. So it's a full-body dance. It doesn't really live in one particular spot. You mm-hmm. want it to live everywhere.
Okay. Both of you are controlling muscles that the rest of us don't even know we have. So I'm just wondering about the relationship between isolation, flow, and something that is like total or full body movement. Is that a question that a non-dancer asks? Or is that something that you contemplate or think about as you compose movement?
And you said, is what a question again?
The isolation. Is there a relationship between isolation, flow, and something that's like a total body movement?
Well,
you got it.
Like, this muscle,
those are different.
I don't know where that is. I don't know. Like, I don't know how close that muscle is to my bone, but you do.
Yeah.
Or this is what I'm talking about. Like that kind of deep sense of what's happening in your body and how you use that and then how you grow that.
I think that sense grows from just extensive training, you know.
Yeah.
We train each of those different groups, different things, you know, from isolation, you know how many hours we spend just training just only in isolation and isolating our bodies and being able to get control of that, and you know, it's yeah. hours of extensive training in that one field, and mm-hmm. then and flowing and flowing our body. It's just hours of extensive training and all of those different techniques and learning how to, you know, thread those together. Mm-hmm. We make the connection through mm-hmm. movement. You know, we build that connection. Mm-hmm. We create those connections for ourselves. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, I like you said build, because you made, I was thinking that while you were explaining and thinking, like, it's just like a, you know, any movie or something, like you want it to build up to the climax, you know what I mean? So I think like what he's explaining is like, some days you're practicing all full body where your arms, legs, everything's moving all at once. You're connecting everything. But sometimes you want to start off where you just start with the arm and then the arm and then it starts leaking to the head. Like you start, I call it build a body. We call mm-hmm. it build a body where mm-hmm. like you start with one part of your body and then eventually your full body starts to activate over time, mm-hmm. you know? So yeah, it's definitely, there's no way around it. Buck explained it the best. It's just like you have to train those individual things, because there are some times where people are like, man, your boogaloo's really good, which is more of a full body dance, but your animation isn't good. And animation is very like isolated. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? It's like arm, head, boom. Like you got to really piece your body together and take the time to like almost like build it like a puzzle. You know what I mean? So mm-hmm. I think you just got to train all of it individually. And then once you get all these techniques, now your body becomes a playground mm-hmm. and you can just, whatever your imagination dreams up, you can mm-hmm. just go for it.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. If you're physically capable.
Okay. Well.
Because there's certain stuff, I still can do most of the stuff I could do when I was 15, 16, but some of the stuff you like, ooh, I got to do a little yoga before I do that one. Uh-huh. You know,
stretching. Well, is there, I want to take us back maybe to the beginning of the conversation a little bit. Mm-hmm. Is there a meditative, spiritual, or mental state that you find yourself in or take yourself to in order to create, choreograph, maintain your skills?
Absolutely, for me. Mm-hmm. I think for a lot of the approach that I have in building who I am through this movement, it's a lot of it is rooted in just getting to know myself and knowing thyself and just digging deep mm-hmm. into, you know, who I am as a person. And so, and that's just something that I'm personally attracted to. Like, I used to meditate a ton when I was like 13 years old, all the way up to like, you know, 21. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, trying to find, you know, my inner self and as far as my movement, like he said before, it's something that you'll know how that feel once you hit a certain level in movement. You know, you'll feel that divine energy coming and you're like, oh man, this is more than just, it's a certain place that you get to that you feel like, man, this is more than just my technique. You know what I mean? It's certain places that we've hit when we've put so much into the movement and everything goes away and you're moving in this instinctual space. You know what I mean? Where it's almost like this ultra instinct that you're in. I got that from Dragon Ball Z, who watches it, but that's a real thing. That's a real thing. Ultra instinct for us is a real thing. It's a certain place that we've been in before. We've seen each other go there, mm-hmm. where it's like all of that training that you're putting yourself through and all of the experiences that you've had in this world, you actually get to really see that come out in a way that just is just beyond dance at that point. It's beyond training. It becomes something that's automatically just like, you're not watching that person's physical, you're watching that person's spirit speak to you. Mm-hmm. And that's mm-hmm. what we always strive to feel, because we felt that before and mm-hmm. we've been there before. Yeah. For me personally, that's the place that I always, you know, strive to feel. You know, that's when you know you're going in, like you go deep, and you just like.
As I've gotten older,
you will see someone get there.
Yeah, you'll know when they're tapped.
You'll know when they're tapped.
We always be like, oh, they're
tapped out.
Like, oh, she's gone. You know, we say like, and that's our way of saying they're so deep in it, they're not here with us. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? They're somewhere else, mm-hmm. Mentally, spiritually, and you can tell mm-hmm. through the movement, because I've been in sessions where. You know, he'll do a round and it'll make me tear up because it's like he's locked in and I can see it's deeper than just dance. Now I want to like a more like logical, not say logical, like less spiritual preparation in a way is like yoga is very spiritual for me. As I've gotten older, I like really realize how important it is to like stretch my body, keep my body as limber as possible because sometimes, you know, your brain will want to do something, but if you ain't prepping your body prior, you can hurt yourself or put yourself in a bad situation. Mm-hmm. Also, like, similar to method acting and things like that, depending on the story we're telling, you know, like, I may tap into an experience, like, depending on what character I'm playing or what the piece is about, I may tap into a personal experience I had, or I may tap into an experience that someone close to me that I know has been through something like that. So it's like, it's a lot of things that get you mentally and spiritually prepared to perform. And it's either tapping into your own experiences, someone else's experiences. And like yoga is my way to kind of calm my heart rate down. Because even though I've been doing this a long time, I always still get butterflies for every performance. It's just, that's how I know I care. That's how I know it matters. Like mm-hmm. I never feel like, oh, whatever, let's just go do this. It's always like an intense feeling. And then once I'm in it, I'm gone. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, and then when I come out of it, that's why after a performance, you feel so drained because you don't really know where you are, at least on the level we go to. Like, I don't really know where I am. I'm so locked into the thing that it's not until it's done that I'm like, oh, dang, I was expending a lot of energy. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's kind of, you know, loosely similar to what he was saying, just... You know, you just try to tap in as deep as you can so you can give the most honest. Oh, and I want to say this too. And therapy has helped me a lot too. You know, like, because Buck said, like, knowing thyself. And for me, shout out my therapist, like, she's helped me a lot to get to know why I'm wired the way I'm wired, why certain things affect me a certain way. And, like, I used to have trouble expressing an array of emotions in my performances. It was easy for me to, like, call upon anger or call upon ego and bravado, you know, arrogance. Mm-hmm. But to actually genuinely show happiness in my movement was actually very difficult for me when I first started doing a lot of performances. Mm-hmm. And like I find myself like fake being happy, but it wasn't like really from a real place. And I think it helped me a lot when I started to like unpack my own traumas and really like talk about it and actually seek help about it, that it actually made me a better performer.
Gorgeous, and also brave, and it can't be easy to bring other people into the form. So in the film, we saw the company Movement Art Is.
Yes.
Were those street dancers who you were working with?
Yes.
They were?
Yes.
So the process of bringing them into the form, it was easy.
Yeah, they already lived the life. Yeah.
Okay.
Olga wasn't necessarily a street performer, a street dancer, but she was very familiar with, you know, a lot of those techniques that, some of the technique that we use in street performing, and she's just an open channel. She was the one that wore the all white, that did the kind of
Olga
like...
No, wasn't in this one.
No. Oh my God, yeah, I'm thinking Olga about the wrong film.
Yeah. Another film.
All different film.
Yeah.
All of those dancers that you saw, because Olga was the process for making that show.
But that was the one before projections and stuff. So it was Alexa and Raimi.
It was all of them, right? Yeah,
Quentin,
it was the process.
Now Marcus, Ronnie.
Yes. That was before we brought Olga into the picture. Yeah, but yeah, Olga. All of those dancers were street dancers.
Yeah.
Okay. So good to you bringing that opportunity to people. And you mentioned that there's more films. You said it was another film. So there's more film projects that have been done and more that are coming.
Yeah.
Want to tell us about those?
Well, it wasn't necessarily a different film more so than it was a different time in this process that you guys saw. So this process was the making of this show that we toured called Love Heals All Wounds, and which we actually performed.
We did
in Campbell Hall. And that was the process in which you saw us have different performers in it. And then the actual final cast, we had one of those dancers Olga was a part of. But we do have other films that we've been working on, from our personal films that we've put out ourselves to films we've done together to our work in film right now. We have a film that we're working on right now that's going to be a feature film starring the both of us, mm-hmm. and about our process. And I don't know how much I should say.
No, long story short, yeah, we're not going to give away too much.
Yeah.
But people are going to want to find it. What's it called?
Well, you're not going to find it just yet.
You're not going to find it just yet.
But, okay. but what we're doing is we're working on the feature film, but in reality, I just want to speak on the why behind the feature film and why we're excited. And, you know, I don't want to say too much, but...
We don't want people out there going to... It's not out yet. It's still in pre-production phase, and we don't want people going out like, let me do this before these guys do it.
Okay, yeah. Don't say another
word. We keep it close to the chest. But no, the why. I can explain the why. Okay, we've always wanted to have that Fred Astaire, Gene Kelly moment. And I feel like for our vernacular, and this is no knock to any of the street dance movies that have ever come out, but if you look at it, like, the narrative doesn't have depth and substance. It's always about the battle or, you know, and I'm not knocking it because all those movies have provided jobs for dancers, all the step-ups, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So I'll never knock those films. But I also, when I was growing up, like, Schindler's List was a powerful movie to me. Color Purple, like there were so many movies that resonate with me, and I always wondered, how come we don't have a film with that type of depth and substance with our movement pushing the narrative? Mm-hmm. So like when you see a lot of me and Buck shorts, it's like we're trying to crack that hypothesis of like, why hasn't that happened? Mm-hmm. And sometimes Hollywood tends to be formulaic. So some people aren't going to take risk, you know what I mean? It has to be something they've seen before.
Yeah,
so
it's not broke, don't fix it type of vibe.
Yeah, they
just want to keep doing what they know
works.
What the experience works.
Yeah, and so I think with all our short films and some of the stuff you guys will see in the performance tomorrow, it's like us saying, like, there is no boundary to the story you can tell, mm-hmm. and hopefully we can create a new standard for street dance and film, and it doesn't have to be stuck in the place that it's been the last, I don't know, since Beach Street and Breakin' in the 80s. Even those movies were about battles. Mm-hmm. So it's like it's almost been the same formula for like 40 years, and it's like, can we change it? Can we not try something different? And I think we're like, well, if they're not gonna believe in it, we just gotta do it ourselves.
I love it. And the shorts that you're talking about are found on YouTube. You got your own channel. Because I know people are going to be looking for you.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So we have a short called Color of Reality, mm-hmm. that we've done in collaboration with this artist named Alexa Mead that was about police brutality and things that were going on in our environments and where we come from and that moved us to make that film. Mm-hmm. But... yeah, that film is one of those very incredible, just incredibly visual, visually pleasing films that we've made, and that has a lot of depth. And the story isn't just around the entertainment of movement, but it's about this, you know, bigger, more important topic. And we have a film called Am I a Man? About the mass incarceration system in America, mm-hmm. and that story's being told through movement. In collaboration with Brian Stevenson. We have, I have a personal film that I worked on in collaboration with this guy directing it, David Javier over here. It's called Nobody Knows, and it's about my personal experience growing up in a Christian household and how that, you know, and how I had these tug of war moments in that space. And, you know, it's a very powerful and, you know, film just for people just getting to know me, you know, and it's a very personal film. And Boogs has a lot of different short films that he's created personally.
And some that we haven't seen, we'll see them tomorrow.
Yep.
So I don't want to talk too much about the, you know, what they're about.
We'll see them tomorrow.
Yeah.
We'll see them tomorrow.
Campbell Hall.
They will be screened. So make sure you come out.
At Campbell Hall at
8 o'clock.
8 o'clock. Come hang out with us.
I feel like maybe I've been getting the signal to open to audience questions for some time now. and so there'll be a student with a microphone. If you have a question, please raise your hand and someone will find you.
Could you tell us where the word jukin came from?
Yes. It was a, the style was originally called the Gangsta Walk because a lot of gangsters in Memphis were doing it. And it was more simplified. It was like this confident strut. And it was just, you know, the attitude of like being unapologetically yourself, you know, as far as the approach to it. And that's what we thought was gangster, you know, as far as like our generation. But back then it was actual gangsters doing this movement. And they wanted to change the name. Some of our, you know, the generation before ours wanted to, I mean, well, we wanted to keep what the OGs in our style, the people who were doing it before us, had. We wanted to keep the lane that they paved for us alive. And but we didn't want people to not be attracted to the style. So we were looking, I mean, in Memphis, they called that style a few different things as it evolved. There's this style called, there's a, in certain neighborhoods, they called it bucking. In certain neighborhoods, they called it chopping. In certain neighborhoods, they called it, and then juking was one of those. And it was just one of those things. It didn't come from a something that came from before, because I know we had like juke joints and we had all types of things that derived from, you know, that term juke or juke. But for us, it was just a word that people would say that was the closest to what they can probably relate to. So we probably did have some people that was like, oh, that boy juking, you know? It was just, you know, terminology that came out of people when they were, the best way they could, you know, describe it. And so bucking was one of them, chopping was one of them, juking was one of them, and juking was the one we ultimately landed on as far as like what they wanted to name it to actually have it be something that the masses were attracted to, you know, because that sounded a little more pleasing than gangsta walking.
You both like to work individually and collaboratively. Which one speaks the most to you?
Collaboration.
Yeah, I'm a collaborative.
Sorry.
Mess. Not mess, but in a good way. I live for collaboration. We come from well, the style of dances that we do is very social. Like they're built around that social aspect of doing it with other people and in collaboration with other people. That's how we learn and grow, and it's always been attached to that DNA. So like I think collaboration is something that we were naturally attracted to, and especially when you're like-minded. Like, so I enjoy collaborating with John Boogs more than anything, because, you know, for me it's like two heads are better than one when it comes to like some of these ideas. A lot of times he just takes my ideas on a whole nother, you know, to a whole nother stratosphere and vice versa.
Ditto what he says. Like, collaboration is the best, you know. It's nothing like having a bunch of phenomenal artists in one space, you know. Like, I can't make music like Jason Yang or Yo-Yo Ma. I can't DP, and I mean, I can direct, but I can't DP and film the way David does. Like all the people we work with, they bring a genius to the table. And I think, like, you know, my dad used to tell me, if you're the smartest person in the room, get out of that room, you know? So I want to be in a room with people greater than me at different things so we can constantly elevate. And I also come from an athletic background. Like, I played sports in high school, and that really built like a team camaraderie thing with me. So I prefer always working with a team more than solo. I've never been like personally a soloist. I've actually gotten better as a solo performer from being around Buck, you know, because he's really good at being a soloist. I love having four or five other people with me and we're stepping together. That's just, it feels more militant. And I don't know, it's just something I prefer. So I'll always choose the team route over the individual route any day.
Well, that kind of leads into my question. One of my questions is that when you do your performances and you are just so into that performance, then when you do that performance in another city, does it change or do you?
I'm glad you asked that. Me and Buck were talking about this in the class. Like, because we want to allow spirit in the room, you know, I kind of say allowing God in the room, we build like a blueprint where it's choreographed up to certain, you know, it's like, but we leave pockets of honest freedom in that moment. So someone may have saw it in Denver, they're going to see something different in Chicago. They might see the same blueprint of the performance, but we leave these little pockets of, like, sometimes, like, it's like if that moment me and Buck are supposed to, you know, I don't know, like, I'm just making this up, like, scream at the same time, like, or cry at the same time. Like, you gotta leave room for that to be honest. You can't choreograph that or the crowd's not gonna feel it because you're not being honest with us. You know what I'm saying? So it's like building these structures where we know where point A to Z is, but, you know, J, K, T, U might be moments of, like, just pure freedom, you know?
Yeah, because we've practiced for so long just being present, you know, in our truth and in movement. And we know the magic that comes from that, you know, because we all feel different in different days, you know, different days and different times, you know. And so when I'm in one city, I might be feeling something that would move me in a particular place. And when I've been in another city, something might have happened in my life that have moved me into this different space that I get to you know, release, you know. And it's a part of healing for us as well, because when we live in those present truths, in those different times through our movement, then, you know, we get the, you know, we get to trim those away. We get to, you know, release that. And, you know, through dance, because that's how it's always been for us, you know, just consciously releasing, you know, what we've been experiencing throughout that day, throughout our movement. So we always want to at least, if we have something that's extremely choreographed or that's something that, like you said, we're building a strong blueprint around, we want to have those pockets of truth.
Because then it feels fresh, too, you know? Yeah. It feels fresh every day, even for us, you know? Like, it gives us a feeling of, like, you know, I'll be like, dang, I saw you do this, you know, you did this crazy move, you know, at this part, because, like, we're still kind of, like, it's like I always say I got 10 tabs open, like, I could be locked in, and then, like, if Buck's part of it and I can catch in the side eye, like, he did something I'd never seen before after the show, I'd be like, yo, you did something wild, you know, like, you know, so we like to leave room for, like, just exploration, so that way it feels fresh for us, too, every night. It doesn't feel like, you know, it's redundant and we're doing the same thing over and over again.
And I'll give him this in a second, but what do you say? You're going to leave Santa Barbara. You don't live here, right?
No.
So what do you say to a young person who sees your performance and says, I have to do that, but they live in Santa Barbara?
Go for it.
How?
You know, what I mean, no, and I'm going to say what I mean is, like, from the backgrounds we came from, if we can make it out, anybody can, you know what I mean? It's just, you gotta have that deep belief in yourself. It doesn't matter where you're from. There's talent everywhere in the world, every city, every place. There's somebody who's gifted at something. And I think you just gotta go for your dreams. I think whatever you wanna do, you go for it. And don't be afraid to ask for help. Some people, you know, reach out to people who are greater than you at that thing or are already where you want to be and plug their brains. You know, when I was just getting into directing, I reached out to a lot of directors who had already directed films and commercials, and I'd be like, look at my work. Tell me what you think. Tell me what's bad about it. Tell me what's great about it. Tell me what, you know, and that's how you keep growing. So I think, like, just go for it and don't be afraid to reach out to people who are maybe, like, a little bit further along in their journey of that craft than you. Because that can also help you speed up the process of getting better, is just, once again, getting in the room with people greater than you.
And if it's something that kid sees and feels so strongly and passionate about that they can't stop thinking about it the next day or the day after that or the day after that, you know, if it's something that just sticks with them and it just won't leave them alone, then I say hold on to that feeling and hold on to that passion as long as you possibly can, and you know, if that passion becomes a dream of yours, then yeah, go for it. Like Book said, try to make that a reality.
There are also street dance activists, one of whom trained in the dance department here at UCSB, who cipher in Santa Barbara periodically. And so there'll be flyers that go around, and everyone is invited, and young people can actually practice street dance with the street dance activists who are here in Santa Barbara quite often. There's one more question.
Yeah, So it looks like both of you guys are married. I was wondering if, you know, how hard it is to be separated at times. Does your family get to travel with you, or do you do it on your
own? My wife is literally at the hotel room right now with our two dogs.
Oh, that's great.
Waiting for me. I mean, it can get hard. I've been married for almost 5 years, and my wife's fortunately a dancer. We met on tour when I was touring with Madonna. So we understand the lifestyle. She understands, like, I'm literally on tour right now as we speak, and she understands the lifestyle. She understands that, you know, movement is important to me, and I understand that it's important to her, and our different career paths that we have within dance are important to her. So we understand that world. It can get hard being away, but we've been used to that because she's toured with all of the greats, Beyonce, so many different amazing artists. And we just been so used to, like, you know, building our own separate careers and brands that we're used to being busy and staying busy within movement. But it's always great. But we always make sure we, you know, get to see each other within those moments, which is why she's out here right now. But it can get difficult, but we navigate.
Yeah, my wife and I, we met in Cirque du Soleil when I did my first stint at Cirque du Soleil in the Michael Jackson show at Mandalay Bay. We met in 2014. We've been together 10 years, married 5 years. So we kind of got spoiled because we were in a show together, like doing 10 shows a week every single day together for 3 years. And then when me and Buck started touring this show, it was an adjustment for us because we were all over the United States doing this show, and she was still back in Cirque doing the residency shows in Vegas. And then she recently retired from Cirque, not from performing, but, you know, 10 shows a week is tough on the body. And so now I say this, and I'm not saying it just because she's my wife. My wife is one of the most gifted dancers that I've been able to see, very versatile, phenomenal performer. So, like, I don't just want to have her involved just because she's my wife, but she's actually, like, an enhancer. She's just really good and makes me step my game up as a performer. So if I could, my wife is going to be involved in everything that I do, if I can, if it's manageable. But it gets tough sometimes because she's my rock. She's my support system. She's my best friend. And, like, I get a little separation anxiety from her when we're not together, you know what I'm saying? But I got Buck.
Thank you so much. One more? Okay. We have one more question. Can we get a mic down here right quick?
It's not a question.
No?
I just wanted to compliment the two of you on your partnership. Because obviously you're creative partners, but you just hugged. I mean,
we're like an old married couple up here.
No, I'm glad you brought that up. I want to say something.
It's really unusual. I've been doing this for a long time. And to see partners who are so talented individually, but work together so well creatively, and the level of respect, I spent most of the day today with you, the level of respect that the two of you have for your craft, but also how well you get together, how well you work together, and just intellectually, but also personally. So
yeah.
I just want to commend you, what an incredible gift that you have, that friendship.
No, thank you, thank you. No, it means a lot. And what I want to say, I know we got to leave, but you just hit on a great thing that, like, in any relationship, communication is key, and having tough conversations. And I think Buck and I are never afraid to have tough conversations with one another. He'll hold me accountable. I'll hold him accountable. And we know whenever we do something together, I'm going to get his 100%. He's going to get mine. And if not, we're going to hold each other accountable if you're not giving 100%. So I think that's what made us last long, is that we both hold each other accountable, and we're not piggybacking off one another. We truly uplift each other, and I think that's the rarity in our relationship, and rare in a lot of collaborative relationships. It's like, even we can use sometimes the competitive energy we come from to actually use it in a healthy way to one each other up. Like, sometimes before shows, Buck's like, yo, I'm going Denzel tonight. I'm like, all right, well, I'm going Johnny Depp tonight. Then fine. Like, we're like challenging each other to go there. You know what I'm saying? Like, so we'll use it as a friendly, competitive thing, but we're really just saying, do your absolute best. That's really all we're saying.
Yeah, it's all rooted in love.
Yeah, it's all rooted in love. It's like, do your absolute best. Because I know if he goes there and I go there, y'all are gonna feel it. And that's really the goal. It ain't about us. If you leave feeling something, we did our job. If you didn't, then probably one of us didn't go all the way in. And then you don't want that feeling.
But we just know each other so well personally, and we just know how genuinely incredible we both are to each other and how much we mean to each other.
Facts.
So that's what makes that.
Yeah, I love
that,
this guy.
That relationship, so.
So how long have you been working together?
15 years.
Okay.
15 years. Mm-hmm. We started street performing in 2010 together. It's 2025 in a couple months. Mm-hmm. So almost 15 years, yeah.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.